then Bitcoin was this like, wow, here's something concrete, something physical that can create this decentralization on the planet. Because I see this centralization is a very big problem. That's why humans are followers and they don't take responsibility.
Hello and welcome to Bitcoin with Jake. This is a podcast all about people's personal journeys to Bitcoin. I wanted to know more about the people converging on this new form of money. Why do they see value in it? What skills enable their understanding? How is it changing their lives? If you're a founder looking for funding or an investor looking to make investments, then please reach out as I develop my network in the space. Do me a favor and chuck us a 5-star rating on whichever app you're using to listen, or a like if you're watching it somewhere. As insignificant as this may seem, they help a startup project like this hugely. Lastly, if you have any questions at all, please just reach out. The easiest place to find me is on Twitter at Jake E.S. Woodhouse. Now, I'd like to take a quick moment to talk about our sponsor. Fast Bitcoins are a Bitcoin exchange who you should definitely take a look at next time you're thinking of making a Bitcoin purchase. They're a great team, which for me is always the key to due diligence, whilst their product has a ton of features useful to every Bitcoiner. Check out my episodes with Danny Brewster, the founder CEO, and Nathan Smith, the chief compliance officer, to learn more about the people behind the brand. Thank you to Fast Bitcoins for sponsoring the show. Now, on to today's episode. I'm speaking with Sama Katharo. Hey, Sama, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Nice to see you here.
No, well, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast. I was introduced to you by, well, another Bitcoiner based here in Australia, Daz B. So shout out to Daz. Thank you for doing that and putting me in touch with your work, Sama. So very intrigued to hear a bit more about what brings you to today, why you find Bitcoin interesting. So let's start where I usually kick things off, which is at some stage you heard about Bitcoin, maybe it was from a friend or a relative of some form. Can you teach me a bit about what brought you to Bitcoin?
Yeah, it was a gradual journey, but what made me buy the first Bitcoin was when I was teaching at a school. I was teaching computing, and so I decided to do a unit, like a few weeks, where each class did research and learn about Bitcoin and digital currencies. And we also did a field trip to a Bitcoin ATM where I showed them how to convert there.
And roughly when was that, Simon?
That was about 2015.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so 7 years has flown by since then. You mentioned you were teaching computing. I personally am not an engineer by trade and look to leverage other people's skills in that area to understand technical problems or setups, or in this case, Bitcoin. So have you always had a technical slant? How did you end up teaching computing?
Well, for me, it was one of my interests, not the main one. So actually, I was teaching another subject and then the computing teacher moved to Dubai. So then I just filled in for him. So it's not my main area of interest, but it's always been in the background. I always try to experiment with different computing stuff.
And so your main focus is in the meditation that I know of you for, or in another subject entirely? And if you could share, like, how did you end up on the meditation journey and this kind of spiritual side of things?
Yeah, I started out as a musician. So music was always my main thing. But then I had this spiritual awakening that changed everything. And I started studying sound healing first. And then that rabbit hole grew bigger and bigger. So I started studying other types of healing, meditation, religions and traditions and so on. And I've been on that journey for about 22 years now, different healing techniques and so on, and mainly consciousness, like what is consciousness and how do people experience life differently depending on the vibration level within us. So it became clear quite early on that people experience life very differently, and it depends on the inner state, which is not so looked at in the mainstream world, but it's like the state of your inner world is reflected out in the external world. And so it's a natural journey to improve the inner world, and then the external world improves as a result of that.
So fascinating, these subjects. I confess that for a lot of my life, I haven't ever asked the right questions to probably have any connection to someone like yourself that's going to teach me what you're about to in the next kind of 40, 50 minutes or so. But it's funny how, I mean, life is the ultimate learning journey, and these type of subjects are now becoming much more prevalent and potentially hugely valuable. You use a phrase, spiritual awakening. What was that like? And what does that mean to you? There was obviously a moment in time where something happened. Can you talk me through what that moment was and how it changed things?
Yeah, so spiritual awakening is basically when we remember who we truly are. So it's like we are souls, and then we come down to earth into these avatars, the human body. And the first goal is to remember who we are. That's the spiritual awakening. So when we remember who we are, then the conditioning, the programming from the culture, from the family, this is sort of secondary. And we come back to our original mission, so to speak, like why we came to earth in the first place. And this can look differently for people. For me, it was basically becoming aware of frequencies. Everything is frequencies. So the physical body and the physical reality, it sort of becomes secondary, because you can see and experience the frequencies of everything. So the frequency of yourself, of your soul, the frequency of other people, and all things. So it's like the physical reality that I lived in before becomes more like a overlay or a hologram, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely, it does. Or at least in theory, it does. Of course, I haven't personally necessarily experienced that same journey you went on, so it's impossible to say, yes, I know exactly what you mean. But is it possible to kind of give more of a graphic description as to what, was there a specific moment, a specific day? Were you doing something, or you were trying to achieve something, you realized you were, you know, going the wrong way, or it wasn't going very well, or what kind of triggered this sudden realization?
Yeah, it was a gradual shift.
Okay.
I did achieve my goals as very young, about 20, 21. I lived the life that I had strived for as a teenager. So I came to sort of a point where I wanted to go. And then I saw that it was not what I wanted anymore. It was the physical success, or the mainstream success, was so superficial. So I started to be drawn to all these spiritual stuff and learning about. Yeah, it started with philosophy, but it basically moved me to India to try to find some truth, try to find some people who could tell me what's going on. Mm. And there I had some stronger experiences where my reality shifted completely.
So, Sama, just to jump in, so shout out to Merrick, who asked a question on Twitter just now about this conversation we're having. He said, you know, ask him about what happened in India. So it's almost perfect timing to jump in and prompt that question from Merrick. So can you teach me a bit about what India was like? What drew you there? My very basic understanding would be a deep wisdom that has grown there over many, many generations in that part of the world. But please enlighten me as to why you would go there in order to understand more about spirituality.
Yeah, I think it was this book, Autobiography by Yogi, mm-hmm. which is also Steve Jobs, or was Steve Jobs' favorite book.
Yeah.
And it talks about the yogis in India and these amazing things that they could do. It's like because when they tap into this reality beyond the physical, then other rules starts to apply, and we can do what is considered miraculous.
Okay.
So I wanted to meet people like that. I wanted to meet people who could do miraculous things.
Mm.
So that's why I went there. But there I got tricked many times. It's mainly people who say or pretend that they know spiritual things. So I was fooled quite many times by people who wanted my money more than sharing knowledge.
Wow. And that's inevitably part of life, isn't it? Is trying to understand who's going to deliver real value and who's actually defrauding you. And it's very, very difficult to disintermediate the two sometimes. Bitcoin, of course, is a brilliant lens to look at the world that you didn't have before in terms of our money. Like, who controls the money? Why is it being used? Why are we incentivized to use it? Does it actually benefit us? That's probably a part of this conversation we can get into later down the line. But that must be hard. You're in, a foreign country, not from India originally, and people have taken your money and taught you nothing. That must have been very frustrating to have plucked up the courage to travel there and to go and find out, to then be disappointed.
Yeah, when, you know, it's similar to altcoins, these spiritual masters that pretend to be what they are not. It's very similar to figure out the crypto world, and sort of finding yourself is similar to finding Bitcoin in the end.
Wow.
And find something to actually stand on.
Love it. Okay. And embellish that a bit more for someone who's listening that probably hasn't studied Bitcoin as much, or the crypto market for that matter, in very simple terms, like, why are they so different, and how are they connected in how you just described?
I actually wrote an article about this. It's like decentralized spirituality in money, something like this, I call it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very similar coming into the spiritual arena and all those offers of quick fixes.
Mm-hmm.
That you can go to some course and become enlightened in 2 weeks and things like that.
Mm.
And then to be bombarded with these promotions of scams, coins.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar. So I wrote an article about that, explaining the proof of work, basically, because it's like if we try to jump on the first scam or that we see, we are the product, like, we get tricked. And it's the same in the spiritual world, because we try to find something from someone else, that we are not ready to do the work. But it's like if we do the work, we figure out that no one on the outside can give us ourselves. We find ourselves inside ourselves. And it's similar with Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is not pushing anything on us. We don't have a marketing department and so on. So it's not the first thing we see, because we are pushed into these scammers that try to, because they have marketing departments. So yeah, it's a parallel there. Let's not get stuck too much there.
No, it is an interesting one, though. I'm in the process of writing an article at the moment that I make a very rough analogy, but if you're an early stage equity investor, you specialize in that area, you could buy equities on the public market, but you know that they're both equities, but they're very different value propositions. And so someone who owns $10 of Dogecoin with a Coinbase account, yes, it's a crypto, but it's very different to someone who has done tons of research and has 50% of their net wealth in a self-custody setup of just Bitcoin, even though they're both cryptos, if that makes sense. And so they're very different. Could you give an example of a scammer in the spiritual world that you remember fondly, who, you know, it's just an irritating position to have found yourself in, but was part of the learning journey? Like, what are they trying to sell to you to, you know, as you mentioned already, maybe 2 weeks and you can find enlightenment? What were some of the funniest sales pitches you remember?
Okay, here I need a little break, because I got 300 different ideas at the same time.
That's okay. Take your time.
Well, the first obvious one was that after already a week in India, I was connecting with some people that were very friendly, and they like invited me to dinner with their friends, I guess. And it was a guru there also, like wearing completely white, and they referred to him as the guru. So they were very like generous, very kind. And I was this curious guy just coming into India. I just wanted to experience whatever came to me. And then they started to offer me to help them to smuggle diamonds to other countries. So they said that, yeah, it's the high taxes if we send it by delivery. So if we just have tourists that can travel, like, so we give you flight tickets and you get fancy hotels and then you just leave them there. And then you come back and we pay you for it. So everything seemed very nice and fine. And this was a typical scam, because when I went with them, they sort of, they locked me up and they took all my money and they took my flight tickets and changed my flight tickets to, so I, like after 1 week in India, I found myself going back home again because they forced me. They changed my flight tickets and drove me to the airport and said, like, if you don't go on this plane, we will hurt you, sort of.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was an incredible experience. I mean, I was locked in for 3 days. So during those 3 days, I was going through what you can say my probably first dark night of the soul. Dark night of the soul is part of spiritual awakening, when like all the beliefs that you had, everything you thought about yourself and the world is sort of pulled out from you.
Mm.
So it's a painful experience. It's like a near-death experience, you can say.
Mm. I'm glad you got through it. First point to make. Do you feel like those, what are on paper, they're bad scenarios to be in? But a phrase that I like in the crypto versus Bitcoin conversation is the idea of tuition fees. And perhaps, you know, the dark night for the soul that you just mentioned was part of your journey to where you are at today. And you feel benefit from it now in hindsight. So people who have been rug pulled by FTX and Celsius over the last 6 months, etc., BlockFi, they've lost money, but perhaps it's taught them to research what Bitcoin self-custody is. And in years to come, they'll benefit from that. Is there any relevance in that sense, these journeys that people take and what you learn from the negative as much as the positive?
Yeah, it's like I said, from the point of view of the soul, this what happens down here is sort of just like a video game, because the main point is that you should wake up. And so to wake up, you need to let go of all the beliefs we hold, and to go through those kind of difficult experiences is part of that process, because we grew up in this culture and the beliefs of the culture, and it's really ingrained in us.
Mm.
So to actually come to this place of self-realization, we need to have some sort of traumatic experiences somehow to be able to share. Because if everything is just fine, then we will just keep the same beliefs as we got from our parents for the rest of your life.
And
you will just live in this little bit fairy tale. But from the point of the soul, it's sort of a wasted life, because you're not actually awakening the avatar. So you're coming down here, and then the avatar has these programs, and if the avatar is just playing out those programs the whole life, then it was sort of no point for the soul to come down. Like, he didn't wake up and he didn't start making actions.
And it's funny, I find myself thinking about one of my favorite movies, The Matrix, and the whole idea of being unplugged and waking up to reality that's completely different to what you thought. And what you're describing makes me envisage a soul entering a human body, but just never unplugging throughout its whole life. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's very similar.
Okay. Whoa.
And what we can do, basically, what many people do, is that they shut down the programming and move into the rational mind. So this sort of alternative state, we could just leave out our programming, then we become like our parents and just do the same thing as they do. Mm-hmm. Or we can sort of suppress that programming and think, no, I want something better in life. And this is when we boost the rational mind, we use the rational mind to create new beliefs on top of the old ones, and we start living from those new programs, so to speak. Or we can go all the way when we go beyond the rational mind and beyond beliefs. And that's when it's just when the spirit comes in. And before this conversation, I had this analogy of, if you see a computer with a RAM memory, you know, the random access memory, to be a rational person, like many in mainstream world is, then it's like using the RAM memory to run the whole computer. But with the spiritual awakening, we start using the whole ROM. So the rational part becomes just a secondary feature. So we act intuitively. We don't act on our beliefs, because we, in the higher consciousness, we understand that beliefs is always subjective, and you can't really get anywhere from acting from subjective beliefs. So to surrender, or to like ego death, this is when we let go of the rational mechanism of trying to control life, and then we allow life to unfold and flow.
I have so many questions. I don't really want this conversation to be about me. It's very much more about learning how you brought yourself to today. But I am intrigued as to what part of that process I'm personally at. I wouldn't necessarily know, but I imagine perhaps stage two, which is having moved away from my home and decided that I wanted a different life to my parents for a number of different reasons. So I've got a new set of beliefs that I'm striving towards, but I certainly haven't felt like I've had a spiritual awakening and reached the point of phase three that you mentioned. What are some of the benefits of making that additional step? And am I correct in my analysis of roughly where someone like myself might be at? And I guess I caveat that with, this is roughly episode 50 of this podcast, and it has been such a rich and enjoyable experience talking to people all over the world with different backgrounds, different insights, different passions, who are converging on Bitcoin for different reasons and being open-minded to understanding what it is you're talking about. And even, you know, heading in that direction myself is something that I'm very, very aware of and would like to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because I've been following you for a few weeks on Twitter now, so I reflected on, you know, so when you went all in on your podcast and you left the mainstream world, then you set yourself up in a situation where you have a linear goal. So in a higher consciousness, we act non-linearly. So this means that in the moment, we get intuitive actions. I call them sometimes actions without fear. Because when you have a linear, it's like sort of fear-based, because you think, yeah, if I do this, then I will be fine. So it's sort of based in fear that you will not be fine. So as long as you're on a linear trajectory like that, you can't tap into the present moment, because you're always acting in the past and the future. So you're always doing actions based on a linear worldview. And this is characteristic for stage two, always working towards goals. So in stage three, it's like, because we had a spiritual awakening and we understand, we feel the connection with our soul. And we know that for the soul, this reality is like a video game, because everything is vibrating. The limitations are not true, like lack, scarcity. This is just beliefs that people hold on to, and they act from those beliefs and they live in those results. So to come into this third, like you said, we are guided. And because we know that the soul is connected to the source, then we trust. And the trust is sort of confirmed because we do things, we don't really know why, because it's non-linear. It just feels right. So you just do that, and then you do that, and then you connect, and you connect with all these people, and you get ideas for projects, and people come together, and everyone is like, wow, it's so synchronization, as Jung said. That's when synchronization happens, because you don't do linear actions. You do non-linear actions, and then they sync up, as like in this hive mind, you can say, like the God mind, where everyone is doing their part, and then things just come together. And then these actions result in different exciting adventures. Mm-hmm. And it's also a money flow in that. So doesn't that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. So if I could distill that a little I'll talk about the mindset that I was in to make the decision in terms of jumping into the podcast and having a crack full time. Inevitably, there's more to it than a tweet per se, but first and foremost, I have enjoyed the conversations. I really like connecting with people and discussing their past and their present and their future plans. And I can just feel something drawing me towards that. And I can, you know, I can say quite happily that in 10 years' time from now, talking to people about who they are, what they do, and what they want to do is something I'm still going to enjoy doing. And that to me felt something that I could really attach to and create value. I've just had a baby girl who's now 3 months old, who we think we've pretty much got it under control, but frankly has just not stopped crying. And that's been very stressful for my wife and I. So I was also trying to do a job for someone else on top of that. And that job I wasn't enjoying for a number of reasons. So I decided to do something called failure setting. And I basically was like, what's the worst thing can happen in the next 12 months if I don't have this job? Well, the answer was I wouldn't have the money that job gives me. But the upside is that I potentially build a side project into something that generates an income for my family and helps me, you know, get closer to what I'm passionate about, which is talking to people and learning about Bitcoin. So I've put these kind of rational milestones in place in terms of, you know, replace the salary that you had in October of 2022 by November of 2023, you know, September next year. And that means, roughly speaking, $10,000 per month. And they're all like kind of metrics you can work towards. But as you've just pointed out, they're very linear. So it's like, that's what you have to achieve. And to get there, you've got to do boom, 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 boom. But then part of me feels like maybe the initial decision was more of a nonlinear one, where I was just kind of getting pulled into it. And I didn't necessarily care so much about those metrics. I've just had to rationalize it afterwards. I'm not going to be at stage three, I'm sure, but there's always more to a decision than meets the eye. Does any of that resonate with you in terms of your journey? And, you know, at the time you're looking to make moves in the right direction, but I guess you're having to kind of battle with your newfound kind of peace of mind.
Yeah, it definitely resonates. And the funny thing is that it's basically two ways to do it. It's like, we sacrifice our true self to get something, right? It's like, I think I need this. And then to get that, I need to do something I don't like. And when we do that, we sort of move away from who we truly are. And on the other hand, you have, okay, I will just do what I love in each moment, and we will just see what happens. And when you do that, like you described, you call it like a non-linear action towards your true self, because let me just do what I love and everything will be fine. And when we do that, then we come closer to ourselves in each action, each movement. And that is when our self-value increases. So if we go the other path where we do, I will do things I don't like because I think I need these things. Mm-hmm. Then we sort of, our self-value is diminishing because we don't honor ourselves. We don't honor our essence. And basically that's it from a spiritual perspective. It's like when you understand your value, when you understand who you are, when you get to know yourself, and you feel that you're valuable just being yourself. This is the point where you're just being yourself and people pay you for it. And that's sort of a win-win situation.
Mm. That sounds like a wonderful place to get to. I feel like that's proliferated in your life. So 2015, you were teaching computing, as you mentioned at the start. What do you do with yourself today? I don't believe you're still teaching computing, but rather more this spiritual side to life that you clearly, well, it just vibes. I can feel it through the call. I can still feel that it's something that, you know, really, really is, you're passionate about it and helps give you great clarity. So what's that journey of teaching been like? And is that what you're now doing, right? You're sharing a lot of this. You have a network of people that come together to discuss these ideas and grow together.
Yeah. Sometimes I call them semi-surrender and full surrender. So semi-surrender is when, yes, I want to be more spiritual, but mm-hmm. I still want a fiat job. You know? So it's like we take a job that it's closer to our true self, but it's still a compromise. And usually that's because we still have fear around money. And then the full surrender is when we just basically become our soul full time. So we stop taking actions because of fear. And we just trust the soul completely. So then what happens then is that we don't know what will happen. But something I call nonlinear productivity is when we just sit, meditate, and then ideas, inspiration come. So we send an email or we create something and like a podcast. It's really this step by step rather than the linear progression. So if we keep on doing that every day, we take small actions every day, then because we are ourselves and we are sending this signal like a pure signal, it's like your signal, your soul, like bing, bing, bing. Mm. And then we connect with other people who are also sending their signal. And it's really this more like you leverage the spiritual world rather than the physical world.
Mm.
Because you understand it's actually about frequencies. If you come together or not. So it sort of builds up with these actions without fear, where you find yourself in situations that are very fun. And it becomes a series of quality experiences. So rather than sacrificing ourselves, going to a job, doing something we don't like to earn money, instead it becomes just a series of interesting situations with interesting people.
Mm. Much like this conversation right now, Sam. I mean, it's blowing me away, to be honest, on a lot of levels.
We are more in the present moment, right? We are not thinking about the future. We're not worrying about the past. So whatever we do, we are always present. Mm. And from an engineering point of view, it's like your physical body and your energy body, or your soul, they are synced up. So you're basically, you're allowing the soul to take charge. You're allowing the soul to just speak through you, act through you.
Mm-hmm.
So those other actions, the fearful actions, those are sort of, you know, disturbing. And they are not needed. But in the culture, we are brought up thinking we need to do things because of fear.
Mm.
But from this kind of awakening perspective, they're just sabotaging. Like when you do things because of fear, you're actually sending out this signal that says, meh, meh, meh. And if you trust, if you allow yourself, allow the soul to act through you, you're sending a clear signal.
So when this idea of your decision making is driven by your connection to source and your soul, and you just feel it and you just go with it, how long have you lived this way? Was it something that just really came to you 12 months ago or 10 years ago? And what intrigues me, obviously this is a Bitcoin show, were you in that state of mind when you came across Bitcoin? And is that one of the key drivers for your adoption of it. Yeah, I'd love to understand a bit more about that.
Yeah, it was, maybe start with what I love about Bitcoin first.
Yeah, sure.
And why I decided to dedicate a big part of my life to it. It is because of the decentralization. And it's connected with all those spiritual paths that I went through, because every time I had teachers, they taught me a lot, but I also become a follower. So it wasn't until I become sovereign soul, so that my soul was sort of attached to different teachers before, when I was still insecure enough. So I was looking to them for support and knowledge, and that's centralized, right? And that's detrimental. If we are a follower or if we are a leader, then we are attaching to people and it's centralized. So Bitcoin is the centralized network. And when I saw this, when I understood this, when I verified that it's truly decentralized, it became like a mirror of my soul or my nodes. So I saw these nodes on a network and our souls. And it helped me to detach myself from teachers and to understand more this value in trusting myself. So I have only lived like this for 3 years approximately.
Mm.
And it was connected with the last bull run, because I was still trapped in programs of providing for my family. When I didn't have children, I was more spiritual, you could say, because I trusted more. But it was like when I got kids, it's this very strong program kicked in that I need to take care of the family. So that's when I sort of went back into the mainstream world and I started acting from fear again, because I thought that I couldn't provide for my family by just being myself. So I thought, now I have kids, now it's for real. Now I better get back into that mainstream world and create some real money. So it took me a long time to break out of that. And Bitcoin actually helped me then, both in the sense that I found a protocol. Because, you know, I've seen the corrupt, like many Bitcoiners seen of the corruption in the world. I've seen the corruption in the world for 22 years. Mm-hmm. So I've spent more than half of my life, I've known about the fiat system and how corrupt everything is, and the food, the education and everything. I've seen it for such a long time. So when Bitcoin came, it was the first time that I started to see a way out of it, like a physical way out of it. Before, I always like, everyone will wake up, everyone will find themselves, let's do this. But it was like it didn't go anywhere. Society was just becoming worse and worse and worse. And it was quite troubling from my perspective. Like, I could see we are all souls, but humanity couldn't see that they were souls. But then Bitcoin was this like, wow, here's something concrete, something physical that can create this decentralization on the planet. Because I see this centralization is a very big problem. That's why humans are followers and they don't take responsibility. So yeah, that was a long answer, but
no, it's brilliant. Just it's infinitely fascinating to me, the different lenses people have on life that allows them to see value in Bitcoin. I can ask the same 4 or 5 questions to different people and I get completely different conversations. And that's what this podcast is all about. So thank you so much for sharing that. The thing that intrigues me from this point is then, okay, well, you clearly saw there was a problem 20 years ago. And you made some changes in your own life. And that process has been, I'm sure, some ups and downs, as you mentioned. You know, having kids was a real tough part of getting rid of the conditioning in some ways. You completely just snap back into like, oh God, I've got to forget everything that I've learned and go and make real money or whatever you said, even though fiat money is not real, right? What's your outlook going forwards? And I know that Daz mentioned that you're working on some value for value stuff. Yeah, talk to us a bit about what your plans are for the future.
Yes, so when I started out with this nonlinear productivity or actions without fear, it was really just moment by moment, moment by moment. But as I become more stabilized in this process, I trust myself more. I'm able to project ideas into the future also. Because during these 3 years, it's like I create something, but then I always have to check, is it still real? Is it still valid? And because I refuse to do anything because of fear, like I will not do any project or anything like that. So if I create something and then it feels, oh, I did it from fear, then I would cancel it. Because when you can see or when you can feel frequencies so intimately, like I do, then you know that everything you create gets a feedback. It's karma or cause and effect. Mm-hmm. So if I would do a project out of fear, then I would be stuck in that lower frequency. So it's like the higher frequency or the purer the signal behind what you create, mm-hmm. that's what you live in. So it's really like manifesting your future. Because when I create a course or event or whatever, I will be living in that. And I will be interacting with the people in that. So when I create it, I make sure it's on a very high frequency. And then I will enjoy living that experience.
So manifesting is a word I've heard of in the past, understood it very, very poorly, frankly, but it came up again just in the last week or so with some work I was doing. It's a pretty cool concept, that this idea that you're able to envisage something, and over time, if you envisage it enough, it actually becomes reality. I think that's what you're referring to. Is that right?
Yeah, you need to take the action also.
Yeah, okay.
So because I've been living like this now for a while, it's like I live in my own dream, or I live in my own creations constantly. So I have untethered myself from the fiat consciousness. So this means that my soul is creating my whole experience.
Wow.
So I get visions, what I should do, and then it's just my responsibility to be brave enough to do them.
Awesome.
This in the beginning is like, you still have conditioning. So conditioning is saying, no, you can't do that. No, stay in your line, you know, fit into society and so on. But when we break out of that, we become self-sovereign in the deepest sense, because it's like your soul giving you visions, and then you create that event or podcast or whatever. And then the people will come to that and you live in that. And then you get another vision, and then you create that. So it's really this like just imagination and action, imagination and action.
Okay. So it's the two combined. Yeah.
So if you just do the imagination, then not much will happen. It's sort of like wishful thinking.
That resonates more strongly. Absolutely. So something I don't understand, and won't just from this brief interaction with you, but this concept of frequencies. And just from my perspective, the history of the genesis of this conversation, even, and it's probably connected to frequency in some way. So I saw Daz commenting or something, or I was looking for someone as a guest who had more of a spiritual perspective on what was happening. And Daz popped up, mentioned yourself, talking about meditation. I was like, that's interesting. Let's follow up. Dug up a podcast between Daniel Prince had you on his show. Shout out to Princey, wherever he is. And I was really, really interested in your journey. And that, in some ways, was a conversation you guys had, different time, I don't know when it was, different part of the world, between two different people. But that resonated with me somehow. Is that what you're talking about in terms of frequency? Like, if you're operating at a frequency, other people get kind of drawn in, like a, I'm thinking like an insect gets drawn into a light bulb. If you're thinking in a certain way and manifesting in a certain way, others get drawn towards that. I probably butchered that completely, but is any of that relevant to how frequencies operate? And if you could, please, you know, it's probably a last question we've got time for. Just teach me a bit more about how frequencies operate.
Yeah, if we look at first what we do in the fiat consciousness, we have ideas from upbringing, from culture, what we should do, what we want. And then we attach to them and we try to hold on to them. So it's everything based around these beliefs and attachment. So in the, what I call the Bitcoin consciousness, because like Bitcoin, the protocol, I find Bitcoin protocol to be of a higher consciousness. It's like high consciousness money.
Wow.
So that's, I came up with this concept like fiat consciousness, that's like fear-based and attachments and all these things. And then Bitcoin consciousness is decentralized and it's based in unconditional love because it's just is. It's no attachments. So in this higher consciousness, we allow things to sort of come in and move out, similar like planets and stars moving. You don't have a planet sort of attaching to another planet and holding on to him. And so you allow everything to flow in this non-attachment way. So this means that if we learn to feel that, then we are going with those cycles and we are attracted to certain people. And then on the other hand, we have this filter saying, no, you shouldn't do that, or he could be bad, or those fears, right? But we sort of, okay, they're just fears. They're based in the past. They're not in the present. So then we are attracted to people and we hang out with them. And then when it's finished, we just leave them without attachment. So this is how I think humanity will work in the future more. Mm. So it's decentralized, really decentralized. And every time you're with someone, you know that you're meant to be there because it's like those two planets just colliding for a while and then moving apart. So this is like decentralization in deeper sense. If you look at then centralization in the fiat consciousness, where everything is holding on to and becoming a leader, having followers. Like, I don't want followers. Like, because if you have followers, or if you create like a story around yourself, then you're holding people weak. And that is centralization. Centralization is that some people are stronger while others are weak. But decentralization is really like you have to allow everyone to find themselves, find their inner strength. And you only do that by not holding on to them.
Wow.
So everyone is just shining from inside. And that's the Bitcoin consciousness.
And it's very powerful. And it's strikes me as almost a confronting point to make. And it's, you know, it's the end of our conversation now because I like to keep things to an hour. But for me, when I look at followers and my Twitter approach, it's a obvious metric towards potential revenue generation for a podcast if you choose to advertise with sponsors or develop products for that follower base, you know, find the biggest problem that they have, solve it, create a product for them. But that even that thought process I've just been through would require you to hold people weak by generating a story that they follow. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you're onto something there. Yes.
Wow. Wow. Because really what I'm trying to talk about is the importance of Bitcoin and how it can help people, or at least it's helped me solve a problem I had, which I think other people can learn from. So I'm not necessarily looking to create an unequal relationship, even though I don't follow 5,000 people, but 5,000 people follow me, if that makes sense. I wonder if you could ever kind of shift that paradigm somehow to ensure it's as transparent and as equal a relationship as possible. But maybe that just isn't a thing.
It's all about the signal behind the actions. You know, so you could have many followers, but it's like if you take actions to keep them as followers, then you're acting from fear. So the signal is it. Weak people will be attracted to that, and weak people will stay with that. It's like a trap. But if you have the intention to create not content to keep people or to hook people, but to just like be yourself, then you're sending the signal. And then if people want to follow you, then that probably means that they also want to be themselves. And this is the thing, because then more and more people like, I'm like this, and I'm like this, and I'm like that. So this is also what I found in my life, that when I started to be myself, the people who don't want to be themselves, they left me because they found my presence difficult.
Confronting.
You know? Yeah. But the people who are interested in becoming their true self, they're like, oh yeah, I also want to be my true self.
Yeah, can we hang out?
So it's like everything happens sort of automatically. So it's just, okay, then I'm just more myself, and I attract more and more people who wants to be themselves. So this is how my life has shaped itself.
Fantastic. Well, Sam, it's some incredibly kind of profound moments just in the last hour talking. So thank you so much for sharing everything you have today. My last question is a very simple one. Where can people reach out to get in touch if they want to do so?
Yeah, so we are creating this community now around the podcast, so bitcoinconsciousness.com, and you can check out my podcast, Bitcoin Consciousness Podcast, and I also have a blog on Substack, and that's pretty much it. Also Twitter, Samakataro.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. Very nice. It's an adventure to answer your questions.
It's my pleasure. The journey is what it's all about, basically. But you know, getting the chance to speak to people like yourself, to learn from you, and just generally spend time together is absolutely awesome. So thank you so much for that. And I'll let you know when the episode is live. Thank you, Sam, for joining.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're one of those that find it interesting to be your true self. And that's why we're here today. And many others are on the other side when they are feeling confronted by me talking.
Well, and even so when you say...
Very nice to meet you.
No, nice to meet you. It's almost like my conditioning is kind of fighting against that. I can feel it going, oh, is that right? Are you sure about that, Jake? So I must spend time exploring that. Oh, Sam, again, thank you so much.
Ciao.
Okay, friends, nice work. You made it all the way to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this conversation. As I said at the start, if you have any questions, then please don't hesitate to reach out. And if you enjoyed the episode, then please rate, like, subscribe, and share. That's it for now. Enjoy the rest of your day. All the best, Jake.